We recording?
Mic test.
Okay. I haven't said it in a long time, but ready. 1, 2, 3. Welcome to the Elmo's World Podcast. This is Elmo Odor Jr., your host, and I'm here with my friend Mark. Mark, can you introduce yourself?
Well, thanks for having me on. And I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, USA.
Awesome. Can you tell us about what you believe, what sort of ministries you're in, all of this stuff?
Sure. So I'll tell people what I do. What I do for my first five work for Microsoft, and I am involved with several ministries in the Atlanta area. One, the major one I'm involved in is called Ratio Christi, and that's Latin for the Reason of Christ, and it's a Campus Apologetics Alliance, and we work with college students, and they have chapters around the country. My role at Ratio Christi, I'm a regional director for Southeast, and so in my area, we have several campuses, and what we do in those chapters, these are all student-led, by the way. Students lead these organizations, and then we just have directors to kind of help them with the organizing and also kind of the direction, just to keep the organization going. And all that word means defense. In this case, defense of the Christian faith. And then also evangelism or outreach. Often, you know, I have tables and talk to students. And I've done it myself, too, at a number of different campuses, both spoke to student groups and then just generally talk to a lot of students just about, you know, what they think, what they believe. Just in different settings. Sometimes we're sitting outside in the sun. So, in California, they did a style where they just had a drop out in the student area, put snacks in the middle, and people would just have a conversation there in the noon hour. Also, sometimes at night, we put up whiteboards and try to engage people with questions. So that gives a kind of profile. Yes. So yes, I think among a lot of questions are probably more outspoken and also, you know, able to kind of define on my faith and in that way.
Awesome. Okay. So I'm gonna start and say that right now, as of this moment, you know, I am atheist. And but back then I was very deep into Christianity, and I actually still believe that, like, what my belief at that point in time was genuine, right? Because a lot of Christians say that once saved, always saved. So, like, if you're not saved today, that means you were never saved back then, you know, like if you're a carnal Christian or backslided from the church. So I guess, like, maybe we could talk about that, about the Christian faith.
So how would you classify? So there's generally one way to understand atheism, hard atheist, and a soft atheist. So hard atheist means there is no God and I know why. Soft atheist means there's probably no God. I mean, roughly that's you know, definition. But do you take the viewpoint that you can depend on God or gods? That your viewpoint or
I would say I'm sort of agnostic Christian in the sense that that I don't think there's a model of God out there that could convince me that there is one that could stand on its own and prove itself to be at least to have sufficient belief for me to say, as much as I believe that the earth is a sphere and not flat, I could also believe like that God is real. You know, there's no model out there that's enough for me. So far,
agnostic is the word "mostless," which means to know. And some agnostics are saying, "Well, I'm an agnostic because you can't know anything." And so that's kind of a hard agnosticism. It's not the agnosticism would be there's certain things you can't be sure of.
Yeah.
So how did you classify yourself? Certain things you can't be sure of. Well, absolutely, you can't really know anything.
Well, for my epistemology, I recognize that there are a lot of presuppositions that we humans, you know, we take we assume in our daily life, but we're actually very hard to absolutely prove. Like, for example, the existence of other minds. And that's why, like, if we're talking about like absolute truth, I'm going like pure Descartes and say, you know, like the only thing that I could truly prove and know is that, you know, the I think, therefore I am, the cogito ergo sum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so others, I just say, hey, you know, like, is it reasonable for me to believe that other minds do exist? Because, you know, I could be inside of a mad scientist like lair and just be like, he just inputted like my whole life's memory 5 seconds ago. That could happen, you know? Mm-hmm. We could never really have that perfect assurance. But I assume, right, in my daily life that all this is what it seems to be. So that's the sort of like agnosticism that I have.
Okay. And okay, so going back to Descartes, you know, I think therefore I am, does it viewpoint require consciousness for there to be a belief or a truth? Let me separate the two. Let's separate belief from truth. Let me say the truth. Whether or not you know something, does that require, you know, consciousness of it?
Well,
consciousness, in other words, makes it true.
Well, when you say consciousness, like that like a consciousness that the electricity in our brain, or like consciousness, like being conscious of something, like being aware. What do you mean? Okay, so being aware of something is also equivalent to not knowing something. I guess like that's how it works, right? You have to be aware of something to know it.
Right.
Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So like if, for example, and take like a baby for instance, so baby's still trying to figure out, you know, where they are, where they are, they're kind of disoriented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good one. And, you know, go back to, I think, therefore I am. And, you know, I do believe there's truth in that. I don't, wait, I'm going to give you my viewpoint on that statement. Again, I haven't had a chance to make a statement about Descartes and have not studied Descartes, but just on that sentence alone, my view would be, it's not incorrect. To me, it would be incomplete.
Incomplete. What do you think is incomplete about it?
Because it depends on your, first of all, phrasing that sentence and coming to that conclusion. And so, but I feel like a person's existence is independent of a person coming to that conclusion. If, you know, that baby would still exist. So let's say they exist. So they live for a month, and for some unknown reason, they die early from some disease. You know, very sad. But do they ever get to the point where they worked out their own existence?
Well,
and then even if you do say, I think that's who I am, exactly what is your claim?
So it's more, it's actually, so the cogito ergo sum is more about like epistemology rather than ontology. Because epistemology is like knowing how we know things, right? Studying how we understand or believe things. And ontology is studying the thing as it is, or or being. So cogito ergo sum, or I think therefore am, is mainly about what are the things that I know that I can be sure about truly, that is real or is true. It doesn't really ask like what exists or what I can prove to exist, but it only asks like what I prove I can know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So for example, like René Descartes, he arrived at this conclusion because he was asking himself like, hey, how do humans know things? One is, of course, empirical evidence, right? Your senses, or another form is rationality, like your reasoning, you know, logic, stuff like that. But he arrived at the conclusion like a lot of these things can be biased or flawed or misrepresented, or and so that's why he was like asking like, what's the prime thing that we humans can be really, like, you know, the like a prime data that we could rely on. And I think that's where
Okay, but again, I think Descartes was coming from a stream of philosophy that established humanism. By the way, it's a serious thing about, right? Humanism is effective since then.
Mm.
But in my worldview, there's other types of knowledge. There's the knowledge that dogs have about themselves. There's a knowledge of mammals and, you know, and then I think there's also things that are true about inanimate objects that don't require that inanimate object to have a thought about itself.
Mm.
So you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, so I recognize your point where, like, something can exist even if it doesn't know anything. Like a rock, right? A rock doesn't know anything and it exists. It
doesn't know anything.
Yeah. So I recognize that. But anyway, like, so when it comes to God and, like, how would I be sure that God exists as much as I can see this rock and feel it? I guess there are levels for me to say, like it's equivalent to, like, I can, like, for example, if someone claims Santa Claus is real, right? But yeah, like, but he only appears like Christmas midnight. You have to catch him and, like, really see him, detect to know he is. But let's say like half of the world's children believe in the Santa Claus fairy tale, right? Like, so that's a different level of evidence that I need to actually believe that Santa Claus is real. The same way for God. You know, it's like, it's different from, yeah, like...
Were you told the Santa Claus story when you were young?
Yeah, but I never really believed it. I thought it was a Western fairy tale, you know, like...
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up with Santa Claus. And I tell you another thing. When I was young, my parents had a viewpoint. They didn't want to read me fairy tales, like, because they know they weren't true. And this is a true story. I started school. And some of the other kids were talking about these stories. I mean, and not in a way that they thought they were true, but just, you know, quoting what these fairy tales were. And my mom reminded me, I said, "Hi, Chad, Mom." And then I started complaining to her. I was like, "Why are you doing this on me? I mean, I know it's fake, but then I don't even know anything about it."
Yeah.
Like, I felt like there was a gap in knowledge. You see what I'm saying?
Mm.
It's not because I thought it was true, but... But, you know, beyond that, I mean, there's a lot of entertainment. It's a big business, Star Wars, DC, Disney, Star Wars, Star Trek, you name it all. And, you know, people are entertaining themselves. One of the recent movies that just came out, I did see the first Dune.
Yeah, I love Dune.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, it is.
Because I really love, like, science fiction. Not every science fiction, but a lot of more maybe the upbeat science fiction, which a lot of it has been, you know, kind of in the recent years. But, you know, some friends I have said, "Oh, yeah, you got to go see the second one now." So
you should. You should.
But it's entertainment, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's possible for people to separate, what will say, you know, a mythology and what's the truth. But then you have to ask yourself, even in a fictional story, what truth does it convey? Can a fictional story convey a true message? Now, to me as a Christian, I'll tell you why this is important. Because some of the claims in the Bible, like from Jesus, are parables. What's called parables. They're just intended to be morality plays.
Yeah.
They're not intended to be like an actual story.
Yeah.
They're not presented as a historical fact. And yet, and again, we'll see, and I talked to a couple of the Bible, but they thought the entire thing was a fail. But then my counter is that I think the Bible makes, for example, the historical claims that have proven to be true.
Yeah.
In terms of history. And there are many other similar types of books that have made historical claims that have not proven to be true. So, that's a distinguishing fact.
Okay. So,
back to what, go ahead.
When you were 19, you said that's when you were converted to Christianity, right? What was the turning point?
Okay. So, to me, conversion actually happens over a period of time. 19 is when I affirm that that there was a real God, you know, and that is accepting the basic fact of Christianity. And the pivotal point right then was there's a popular song, the Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd." And the person I was talking to wanted me to think through, you know, whether or not I believe that that was a true relational statement. And that's when I made a decision. What? There was a technical point that I had to research before that. And this may interest some of your listeners. And that is, I was curious about the preservation of the Bible. In other words, it had been translated. It has been translated, you know, in several versions. There's a lot of manuscripts out there that have been used to translate the Bible, and want to understand more about that chain of custody. There's no one that claims that you have any original copies of the Bible, and I'm talking about either Old or New Testament. But there is a claim that what we have is a faithful reproduction of all that. So anyway, I'm not going to get into all the questions I asked, but I studied that question to my satisfaction. And then, you know, I was satisfied that, you know, what you consider as the Bible is basically, now, I'll put this number on top of it. It's probably 99.9% correct and 100% correct on the major claims. In other words, so the major claims of the Bible, you know, have been verified to be authoritative. So at that point, so why do I believe in Christianity? First of all, that I believe it's true. And this also has to do with, you know, kind of the nature of evidence. Is it, so we talked earlier about a heart, he's talking about a self-awareness, right, for himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think therefore I am. I think that's what I find useful in that line of thinking is that, and Elmer, I'll tell you this, and I know before the call, you know, we were talking, you know, in the preparation, and I said, you're really a thoughtful person. I think you're very true. I think the human species was created to go through these thoughtful cycles. And to me, that has more to do with how we were designed rather than any argument about survival or fittest. Like the conversation we're having right now is this essential for our physical survival? How do you know? Is any team that, even as we were talking about earlier, even if you're going to invent something like Disney or Star Trek, is that really necessary for communal survival? That's really puts in my.
But do you believe in evolution? Do you believe in evolution?
What I believe about evolution is microevolution. So I do believe that, you know, species. I know you're changing the topic, but I want to get to a point. But let me answer your immediate question. There are changes in species. I think there is an issue trying to find a common ancestor for life forms. And also, there's another logical problem, and that is, where did the information come from? And these arguments make, you know, my student Munger, in his book, Darwin's Doubt. So, but nevertheless, there's a lot of similarity between species. And to me, that is an evidence of design. But let me go back to my original point. What was I trying to say?
About human beings being designed to question things spiritually.
So then that, if you had asked me about my choice of Christianity, so it was not so much about a discovery about myself.
Mm-hmm.
That's my claim. I was on a journey to discover whether or not this idea of Christianity is true. And I did not believe this is a self-discovering journey. Now, why am I saying that? Because I think there are some worldviews that, you know, kind of lean toward pantheism, that, you know, maybe, you know, when a good view of the universe is God, or, you know, is an emanation from God, or essentially God, and that type of thing. in which case it will make logical sense. It is more a self-discovery journey, you know, discovering your place in a universe from which you are inseparable. However, I don't believe that's true. I believe I am separable. So going back to Burkhardt's idea, you know, but the idea of an independent person is one of the main ideas, you know, from that line of thinking, which has helped develop a lot of areas of humanities. But also this idea of individuals is consistent with the Christian worldview. It is not consistent with some other worldviews where, you know, you cannot distinguish between lifetimes. One example I have of that, I read Avatar. I think Avatar was a phenomenal movie. Now, I think the first time I saw it, my friends and I, we had problems getting in the regular show, so we had to see it in 3D. But he wears these glasses, and the whole movie looked dark to me. Because he had the 3D glasses, and, you know, it was all like that. So other than that, though, I thought it was very entertaining, and that the worldview of Avatar was about, it was not just the interdependence, it was almost like the essential interdependence of life form. I think there's an interdependence, you know, of life, but I think it's more separate in, you know, kind of the Christian worldview than some other worldviews.
So the interdependence of individuals is what you're saying is like evidence of design.
Well, it's just evidence of individual design.
Individual design.
Because you could still have a design argument, mm-hmm. but first of all, Avatar itself is a design argument. But the argument there is all life is like one thing, or even kind of the implication from something like Star Wars. And I know a lot of people that are reading too, I get like reading too much into Star Wars, but okay. But they talk about the Force. And this Force, you know, is kind of still like some sort of life force that necessarily, but you know, here's the trick. But wait a minute. How could it get separated into good and bad hearts? And, you know, if the world is all one thing, you know, how is it possible, you know, to separate those things out? That's a challenge, you know, in that worldview. To me, that's getting into good questions about explaining. Let me get back to my original point. So my journey into Christianity fundamentally is this independent idea of Christianity true? And is this independent being of God, you know, that's the claim of Christianity, with Jesus Christ being God, was that true? Mm. And meaning that there is a Jesus who is not me, and yet someone who I could know, because again, in Christianity, the idea is Jesus is alive. Mm. So it is an epistemology, but it's also, you know, I think there's an epistemology of the individual. So it's a knowledge of who you are, what is this idea of Christianity, and then claim about an independent God. True.
So I've noticed that your syllogisms for believing in Christianity sources from like the Christ first and not like natural theology like most, where most people would believe in God first and then God had to contact mankind. Which one was it? Prophet Muhammad, was it Jesus, was it Buddha? So you chose Jesus, and then but. For you, you started with Jesus and then followed up with like, and this is why Jesus is why God is real.
When I say about the truth of Christianity, I'm talking about the claims of the Bible.
So okay,
that they're true.
It's separate for you.
So when I said Christianity was separate from Jesus, that's what I mean. But there's more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think, does it match? So, my view truth is corresponds with reality. And again, one thing I think also it makes me a little different. I am, you know, I got my doctorate in industrial engineering, so I consider myself a scientist, It's a science-based doctorate. I worked as the faculty member, for University of Phoenix for some years. I mentored like 7 students to their doctorate management degree, as their primary advisor. And even as early as this past year, still volunteering on doctoral committees. So I think, again, I take more of a science-based approach. When I was talking about the Bible earlier, it's not just that. I think it's also kind of doesn't match, with what I understand as the nature of reality.
I see.
And I haven't gone into details on that.
But
even they've made science arguments for other people, and those are reasons why. And then I'm going to put on what I call Western education. I don't know if this also suits in the Philippines. And by the way, I didn't know if I said it on the podcast, but I am half Filipino.
Yeah.
So the thing is, I don't know what this idea has affected all of Western education, but I think the science education is terrible. And a lot of times it's about indoctrination. It's not even teaching people how to be a scientist. How do you come to believe what you have is true? I know a lot of the science classes I took when I was in grade school necessarily has to cover a lot of terminology. I learned being in 7th grade and having to learn all the parts of the body and all that type of thing. When we actually run the experiments, no. And even when I was in biology and we were cutting open frogs, that was more of an observational type thing. And I only remember running what I had thoughts of falsifiable experiments when I was in college.
Mm.
And okay. I was taking physics at UCLA.
So we
had actual experiments where we were doing falsifiable experiments.
So were you taking the scientific approach when proving the reliability of the Bible?
Yes.
Okay. Huh? What about the
scholarship behind it? Go ahead.
What about the existence of God, like natural theology? Did you take the scientific approach for that, or?
I think for me, I have from a young age believe in some sort of theism, that there is a higher power. Now, would I identify that? My earliest memory of having that type of viewpoint was I was like 3 years old and believing that there was a God. But would I identify at age 3 that that was the God of the Bible or Jesus Christ? The answer is no. I mean, I don't think that, that idea was fully formed in my mind. Well, that's about...
But right now, though, right. how would you know for certain that God is real? Like right now, like separate from the Bible, just theism.
Yeah. So the key word is certain. And
aren't you certain?
Well, my religion, my understanding of Christianity is based on faith. And I'm going to define what faith I mean by faith. Faith is a promise. Faith is a promise from a person. I'm giving you a certain definition of faith. So I believe that there is a God, that there's a God who has made claims that I believe substantially to be true. And based on that evidence, that's what I'm certain about. Now, could I prove that, for example, to someone else? And I would say probably not. And the reason being that for someone to understand what I was saying, they wouldn't have to buy in, on the validity of that claim. But it is no different than, to me, that type of claim, I can say this is roughly equivalent to a contract. Like, for example, if I sign a contract, I have a contract right now on my home. I don't fully own it. And you're not party to my contract. But I had a contract with my home, and eventually it would be paid off. And so I can tell people about that relationship I have with the bank, but they don't participate as a first person, in that relationship. So what do they think about it? I don't know. I mean, they take my word that there is a contract. But to me, it's the same type of thing. Does that promise apply for them? No.
So you're saying that
Christianity is something, and the reason I do, and let me make one more statement, I'll let you go. The reason I say that is I do like this word covenant. Covenant is like an agreement. There's an agreement between people and God and Christianity, but not just in Christianity. The same word covenant also applies to Judaism. But go ahead.
So this contract, right? Like, so you're saying that you know God is certain because you've sort of experienced this personal transaction, you know, on your own, right? But it's unprovable to others.
It's unprovable to others from the first-person viewpoint. I think people can understand what, like, the nature of the contract is. Again, like, you know, you were, let's say, there was a time when I was not a home buyer, right? So I didn't know what it was like to own a home. And then later on, you know, I did understand it. That's it.
So right now, how do you prove to yourself that this transaction of yours with God is real?
How do I prove it's real? Okay.
By to yourself.
I know. So I see the evidence in things around me. I see the evidence in design. I see the evidence in nature. I see the evidence in how people react. I see the evidence in humor. And to make humor, I think there is no logical reason under metaphysical naturalism for humor, which is itself funny. Isn't that funny? That's funny. I think it's objectively funny, which also makes an objective truth.
Interesting.
You know what? This is the thing about, I like about humor. If there were no objective truth, there would be no good jokes. No, because you know, what is a bad joke? It's funny to you, but not to me. Or it's funny to me, but not to you.
I mean, there could be.
Yeah, it's not even funny.
There could be subjective humor, though, right? Like, people have different.
It's subjective humor. You know what? It's not funny.
But so anyway, like, so design. Yeah. You're seeing in the nature, but
design is evidence. And since then, I do have other evidences now. I mean, all the classical arguments, even though, like, for example, the cosmological argument, I did not use that as initial evidence to come to Christianity. But later on, when I learned the cosmological argument, I got, oh, yeah, there you go, more evidence. And, for example, fine-tuning evidence. To me, this means something as a scientist. A lot of the research behind fine-tuning has been done the last 25 years. So that was not factored in specifically to my agreement with Christianity. And consider, too, how many people have been burned. So one thing I think about, too, I think there have been people who have been Christians since the time of Jesus. How long was that? 2,000 years ago, something like that. Did they have anything to say about the cosmological argument? No. I would argue probably the more argument in some format has been around for a long time. So the idea of why should there be an objective morality, or even possible to have among, probably 13,000 people groups around the world. I don't think it goes about nation states. I mean, we probably have 200-something nation states. But even in the Philippines, how many people groups are in the Philippines? I mean, I could look it up right now. It's like, you know who attracts it? The Christians. I mean, one of the reasons the Christians are tracking it is there's active work to try to translate the Bible into every language in the world. And that work continues. So working with sociologists, you know, that are, you know, academic in nature, they're continuing to track that. But to me also, if you look at some of the other major world faiths, again, this was compared to religion. This is not a reason I became a Christian, but I found it interesting that Hinduism only appeals to certain people groups in a disproportionate way. And even Islam also, you know, is disproportionate. Christianity was through multicultural. And by the way, it's an Eastern faith. It's not a Western faith. I consider myself a Western person. But what does East mean? West was Rome. East was, and guess where it came from? Asia. It didn't come from Europe. I know that. And it came from someone who was a Jew. A Jew living in Asia.
But
as I learn more facts about, so this is, you know, when you talk to me, Now, one thing too, as a thinking person, one thing I enjoy again about you remember about Rachel Christie, I continue to get new ideas that you know people are great to me. Oh, by the way, I didn't tell you this story. 2009, I honestly did not understand a logical reason for atheism or agnosticism. And I do have, or even today, a number of co-workers or family members who have these ideas. And that is really the reason I started looking at apologetics more seriously. It was not to become a Christian. I was already a Christian. But then, you know, I thought, you know what? I need to understand more about this. That led me down a path. And then 4 years into that path, you know, I discovered Rachel Christie and started, you know, making friends there. But I think in general, one of the things that keeps my kind of Christianity active is, you know, taking ideas that people present to me, thinking them through. And I think one way they're able to prove that is if somebody gives me a new idea, could I explain it back to them, to their satisfaction? You know, not through some sort of straw man or fake argument.
What?
We got to be true to the, you know, claim. Anyway, what do you think?
Well, I one last question because this was about quite a long conversation. But like, what if we close it down to like, can you tell me why you joined Rachel Christie, what it is, and what you hope to accomplish from it, and you know, and what you personally get from it?
Okay, so at the time I joined Rachel Christie, I was teaching at University of Phoenix, and I had an interest in apologetics, as I was saying earlier. And I thought there was an opportunity to do a Rachel Christie chapter, you know, while I was there. And I did have one. I did have a student. We had some activity for about a year inside the organization. And I think to me, too, part of the appeal about what Rachel Christie's doing is important. But I think university continues to be an important institution, not just in the United States, but around the world. You know, it's a thought generation forum. And having been I didn't just go to school, I asked tax school. So I think, you know, I like to have an environment where there can be a vibrant exchange of information, and especially diverse opinions, and also, you know, an environment that's open kind of to people groups. And knowledge transfer.
Okay, awesome. One final question, Mark. So what advice would you give me? You know, like, I'm still exploring, you know, I'm not like solid, like, this is what I believe, I'm never going to change. You know, like, what would you say to me?
Well, I'm an explorer too. I think, you know what? I think life is made as an exploration. And again, early on the call, I guess, our conversation, yeah, started as, okay, two cells became one cell that started dividing. And then it was indistinguishable. Somehow, the different cells started putting on different brothers. And how that's all done, that's pretty mysterious. There's a certain mystery behind that. Mm. You know, scientists are still unraveling that. I think there is something to discover. And that's why I believe Christian worldview, the idea of design in the universe, that I'm talking about the natural world, is a strong claim for science. That means that there's something to find. And again, I continue to be surprised at what scientists continue to find. Well, when I was in high school, the predominant thought was like, we had a big picture of the periodic table, like all those elements, and everyone thought, oh, everything's just, you know, all the mass of the universe is just following this periodic table. That's not the thought today. Today, the thought is that periodic table only accounts for something like 23% of the universe. Most of it today is dark matter and dark energy. And these are like some of the exciting fields, I think, to think about, where is this mass coming from? So you know what? When we talk about a discovery path, I admire what you're saying, Yeah, I think anyone who really is interested in science, including myself, I mean, I continue to be on this discovery path. One of the things that's rotten in the world now is this idea of AI and generative AI. Nobody thought we would have had this type of technological breakthrough this soon. And this is exactly what a lot of podcasts are talking about. And by the way, I have been in front of several Christian groups talking about artificial intelligence. And I continue to have people actually give talks. I'm going to be doing one again next month. And listen to me. So when you talk about a world where discovery can continue to happen, what I'm telling you is, to me, as a Christian, I sort of feel that I have a lot to learn. That's what I'm telling you. And I've had my college education, and I've had so many things. I think this is the way we're designed. If people, we're designed for all this discovery. But if it builds on what you said earlier, and again, I think they call it the very correct. I think it's incomplete in the sense that self-knowledge is not the only knowledge to me that's exciting. When I talk about AI, when I talk about dark matter and dark energy, I think those things are outside myself. You see what I'm saying? And now there's like millions of dollars chasing dark energy, dark matter, and actually Microsoft made like a $10 billion bet on OpenAI. And they're not the only ones that are making this level of monetary investment. Is that an investment in yourself? I don't think so. I think that what's real, if you see what culture or where the money is, they don't say this thing, follow the money. You've heard that thing, follow the money. When especially if you have some sort of crime, you got to follow the money trail to see, what was motivating it. If I see what's motivating nation states today, one of the things that I'm not going to get to the negative side of parties. I think there's some negative things people are pursuing. And even people would argue that you have to be cautious in the area of AI, right? Because I think that can go down really fast. And I agree. But I think there also can do a lot of good behind it. So I'm just telling you that that kind of spirit of adventure and discovery is awesome. But let me ask you the question this. What type of things do you think you've discovered that have been major or significant?
For me, I think one sentence for me would be you could be convinced something is so true, even if it's not. Because I've talked to hundreds of people, and every one of them has been convinced this is true, this is true, what I believe is true, But everyone's believing so many different things, But I want to ask myself too, what if what I believe is wrong, And listening to everyone and seeing their perspective, puts everything into this bird's eye view, everyone believing everything, thinking they're the right one.
Exactly. Yeah. But let me add something to your story here. I have siblings who claim to be Christians too. And one of the reasons I think it is not just an abstract truth, but a personal truth, is if we were to tell our story side by side, right? And we have very similar genetics. We grew up in the same area in Southern California and all that. Their take on what they think about Christianity is going to be slightly different from mine. Because the reason, and I'm going to give a reason behind it, because it's also, to me, a personal journey. They believe that there was a God that they interacted with that was kind of their friend as the rock. So going back to that Lord of my Shepherd idea, the idea of the Lord of my Shepherd is that God is like a shepherd is to the lambs, that he takes care of them and that he protects them from danger and that he makes things happen to the benefit of our life. And again, there's things that I believe that happened over my life. And I'll give you just one story. When I was a teenager, I had eczema really bad. And on my mom's arms, right here, everywhere creases, she had these cells that you could see. When she was a teenager, she had eczema too. So this is genetic. But this skin, rash. It's not contagious. And when I was a teenager, it was really bad. My skin was breaking out. And I believe that I prayed for healing. And today, there are no scars. Even right after that, the whole thing healed. And there was a big difference. You could see the difference between my skin and my mom's skin. This is, to me, one evidence of healing. Now, again, going back to that contract analogy, does this necessarily convince someone else? No, because they weren't that person, right? They didn't experience this. And then they still have this idea. It's like, what? How do I know that that was a miracle? See, that's the type of thing where I don't want to take a personal experience and project that as evidence for another person. However, if Christianity is personal, I'm going to claim that there should be some personal evidence. That's what I'm saying.
All right.
If it is personal. If it was completely abstract, then you and I would come to the same agreement as for example, if we were studying the speed of light. I think that's an abstract truth, and it's not a personal truth, and therefore we can come to the same answer.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is, like, I'm agnostic, and I'm not saying, like, this is the truth, you know? So I can't really have a claim against your claim. So,
Sure, that's right.
Well, I guess, like, we'll find out when we're dead, you know?
I have another claim, too. I have a claim that Christianity is the tent where agnostics can thrive. And why? Because a claim among Christians that you know everything. In fact, the claim is that there is a God who knows everything, but that doesn't mean that you, as the person, has to know everything or understand everything. Now, that being said, I do believe we were built to know more. And my evidence is that, you know, the human species has had a lot more advances in communication and culture making, for example, compared to other mammals. And I do believe, yes, mammals can communicate. They've seen it, even with videos, right? They communicate with gorillas or in sign language. But then, do you see gorillas making, like, political systems and creating cryptocurrency and AI? Like, no.
All
right. But communicate? Absolutely. I saw this. I love these videos. I mean, Facebook keep pushing. Once you click, you see Facebook, right? Once you click a video, you keep getting more. Anyway, I had to do with these dolphins at a dolphin park, and they were... And then we put them in behind this wall. And when people would walk up, the dolphins would identify them, and they would sip water over them. Like, you know, third sphere. When they knew how far to sip the water. They're like, that's amazing, you know, that you could have a relationship like that with an animal.
Yeah.
You have any animals?
We do. We have a lot. Anyway, Mark, it's been awesome talking to you. I think we're all going over time. And, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But maybe we could do another podcast again. We could really dive into the how you discovered the reliability of the Bible, and then more into, like, the specific, like, design and nature arguments that brought you to belief in God. You know, this is like an intro podcast. We could do that.
Thanks for having me on today.
All right, thank you, Mark. Nice. Hope to have you again.